One day, Patricia Zedo was walking to an appointment in Salem when she passed by a city bench. On it was a sign that read, quote, happy to chat. She knew the benches well because she helped the city install them, but had never seen someone use them until that day.
And I saw somebody sitting there. And so I went up and said, oh, wow, you're sitting at the happy to chat bench. And she said, yes, would you like to sit and chat with me?
Zeta was late and couldn't stop, so she declined that time. But on her way back, she walked through the same park, saw another person sitting at the same bench, and this time she stopped and sat down.
We had a lovely chat. He had grown up in Salem like I had, and so we were just chatting about it. And he told me that he had lost his wife a few months ago, and he got great pleasure in coming to the park, and this was such a great idea, and he planned to use it on a regular basis.
The benches are part of a city effort to reduce loneliness, and that effort has been influenced by a committee launched before the pandemic called the Massachusetts Task Force to End Loneliness and Build Community. Their argument is that these little actions can make all the difference when it comes to connecting with others. So here with me now in this studio to talk more about loneliness and the co-chairs of the task force, Caitlin Coyle. She's the director at the Center for Social and Demographic Research on Aging at the Institute, Gerontology Institute at UMass. Thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
I also have with me Sandra Harris, state president for AARP Massachusetts. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I'm really delighted to have both of you because I'm excited to talk about this topic. So, Caitlin, just in listening to Patricia Zedo's experience with the Happy to Chat bench, are those kinds of the things that you had in mind when it comes to the goal of the task force?
Absolutely. Really, we started this work before the pandemic, really trying to empower individuals and communities to simply reach out and do small things to sort of make us all feel connected.
And Sandra, what about you?
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. We, as Caitlin said, we started this work in 2019 before the pandemic because we knew of the loneliness epidemic that was happening in our community, actually worldwide. And we saw how it was being manifested and that we knew that there were over 540,000 people over the age of 50 plus living alone and at risk for loneliness and social isolation. So we decided to come together to come up with some ideas to kind of really be ground-rooted, work with residents on the ground, and provide some opportunities and programming for them to kind of stay connected.
So before we go on, let's play a little icebreaker, if you will humor me, for a bit.
Of course.
And this is a true or false. And just the first thing that comes to mind, I know we could totally overthink each and every one of these, but just the first thing that comes to your mind. Caitlin, loneliness mainly afflicts the elderly.
False.
Sandra, if you have social media or are connected virtually, you can't be lonely.
False.
Caitlin, the only side effects of being lonely is a lack of socialization.
False.
Sandra, the main way to cure loneliness is by forcing yourself to hang out with people.
I would say true and false. There's a lot of value in doing that. But there are other things that can be done as well.
That's fair. And Caitlin, you can completely eliminate loneliness.
False.
Okay. So I want to start with this idea of, like, who is lonely. Our producer, Amanda Beeland, she spoke with Kathy Shelp. She's the director of elder services with the town of North Andover. And here's what she had to say about the idea of who it affects.
There is this misconception that loneliness only resides in our most frail of our population, you know, even regardless of age. But it's really not true. There is a segment of the population that's newly retired. Their social life was their job. And now they retire, and they may be retiring to the community they've lived in for 30 or 40 years, but really may not have any connections in that community. And they're lonely. And now what do I do? Where do I go? How do I meet people? How do I put meaning in my life?
Ooh, so it's kind of just shifting life circumstances. But Sandra, is there a misconception about who is more lonely? And if so, why does that exist?
I think there is. As a matter of fact, a recent survey or research done at Harvard showed that the most lonely, depressed individuals or cohorts are young adults between the ages of 18 and 24. And that's a surprise to a lot of us, but it just goes to show you that everyone at some point in time experienced loneliness.
And so just to tie that back to the work that your task force does, do you have a certain focus on an age group?
Well, we initially started with 50-plus and older adults, but as we began to go into the community, we found that there were a number of young adults who and young people who were just as lonely. So we made a conscious decision to make sure that we added intergenerational lens to all of our work. We feel that, especially, for example, in the example that you've used about someone who's retired. I mean, I think as we retired, we have to maintain meaning and purpose in life. And how else to do that than to reach out to a young person, right? And young people are looking for those kinds of connections. So I think that there are opportunities where we can be a reciprocal kind of benefit to both the older adults and the young people. So I think that, you know, there are so many instances and examples and research projects that show with us that really loneliness and social isolation affects all of us at some point in time.
Caitlin, I'd love for you to weigh in on that.
Sure. I would agree with Sandra that I think we started this work based thinking about older adults. And one of the unique aspects of working through the pandemic is that we all had an experience in some way or another to feel what it felt like to be a little bit isolated. And so we really leveraged that and really worked towards some of these intergenerational opportunities. I think the other thing that I would point out is that one of our sort of philosophies at the task force is that, yes, we're working to combat loneliness and isolation, but more importantly, perhaps, we're working to build community and to create connections for people. And I think regardless of how old you are, thinking about your social health the same way you think about your mental health or your physical health, it requires maintenance. Sometimes maintenance you don't want to engage in, going back to your comment about forcing yourself to hang out with people, really thinking about at any age that thinking about your social health is something that can be beneficial for your life.
So this is something I've thought about for a long time, and the question's baffled me. I'm wondering how you approach, quote, solving loneliness, because that's a big topic. But is it a design question? Is it a mental health question? Like, and when I say design question, is I'm going back to the bench or maybe a specific type of housing that we can design in order to encourage more people to interact. But like, how do you approach it?
Yeah, sure. The way I approach loneliness and isolation is actually not so much as a problem to be solved, but really a part of the context in which people live. So thinking about interventions that address all kinds of things like transportation and housing and outdoor spaces are important. But thinking about the fact that not everybody who has a strong social network, that could be part of someone's context, is something that I think is really important. And the other piece I would say is that it's a very unique experience. No person experiencing isolation or loneliness has the same experience. And so I think when we think about interventions and solutions, we have to think just as sort of nuanced in our solutions as we do about sort of how that came to be. People don't wake up one day and realize they're socially isolated. It typically happens over time. And some days I feel isolated and some days I don't. And so thinking about sort of solutions, quote unquote, is really about thinking individually about what people's experiences and trying to meet them where they are.
Sandra, can I pose this question to you? And that is there anything unique to our society, maybe as Americans, maybe as people who live in Massachusetts, that make us maybe more or less susceptible to loneliness than other parts of the world?
No, I think loneliness and social isolation is a worldwide epidemic. I mean, I think we're seeing that it's happening all over the world. I think, for example, you've talked about the Happy to Chat bench. This was an intervention that came out and is very popular in the UK. And it's the kind of things that we're all working to develop solutions. So this is certainly a worldwide problem. And it certainly is something that has been addressed by the World Health Organization. And it's kind of called attention to the fact that we need to prepare for an aging society, an aging world, and also to address these kinds of issues.
It is a worldwide problem, I would absolutely agree, but I am wondering if there are things about the reason I ask, and I'm not trying to be leading here, is because I could use an example of my childhood where, it was very common to have, like, multi-family units where, like, each branch of the family, I grew up in Egypt, so each branch of the family lives on a floor, and here you don't really have that. And so I am wondering if you do think that there are certain aspects of our society that could be tailored to make us more social.
Yeah, I would agree. I, having not grown up in New England, have a similar sort of. I grew up in the Midwest. Really thinking about New England, a couple of things come to mind. One, sort of this sort of patriotic individualism, where people, you know, sort of have a pride in doing things themselves and standing on their own two feet, and also. The weather, which is a real practical issue, which we know that the built environment affects our ability to connect. And so having winter months where ice and snow can prohibit people from getting out and being social is really important. I think broadly as a society, we certainly have different sort of ways of arranging ourselves. And the sort of geographic dispersion of families has been something that's, I think, really changed the game. I'm from the Midwest, where most of my family, aunts, uncles, cousins, live in very similar towns near each other. Mm-hmm. And that's not happening as much as anymore. People are leaving to get education and to get jobs and to move around. And so that's certainly something that's putting adding to the social isolation.
So I want to play another piece of sound. And our producer, Amanda Beelin, spoke with Patricia Zado, who you heard at the top. And she says in 2015, she surveyed 400 people above the age of 60, and they identified loneliness as the number one issue. Here's what she had to say about what she heard from them.
The problem was the feeling of being useless. I got comments like, I was a CEO of a major company, and my opinion used to be important. Nobody listens to me. Nobody seems to care what I'm thinking, or they leave me alone for long periods of time. And it really stunned me.
So, Sandra, I do want to bring up, because you brought up the issue about meaning. And for a lot of elderly people, I also hear this, is this idea of, like, feeling ignored. And so what are some specific ways we can help the older members of our community feel less lonely? And just with that, like, should we screen for it?
Well, I'll let Caitlin address the screening because that's more in her expertise area. But, you know, one of the first things that we did when we began this work was we went out into the community and had four community conversations where we actually listened to community leaders and residents. And one of the things that we did find was that older adults felt that their voices were not being heard. And we made a special intention in figuring out how we can bring them to the table. We created a subcommittee called Valued Voices, where we are constantly asking for their feedback and asking them to really assess the work that we're doing. Are we really making a difference in their lives? And we're also encouraging them to become involved. There are many, many ways of doing that, and we have programs encouraging them. For example, lifelong learning. We were encouraging them to get involved with their communities, their age-friendly projects that are going in their community. And, you know, oftentimes we feel that when we retire that we forget about all the value, all of the wisdom that we have and can bring to the table. So we really are encouraging this and opening, providing opportunities for older adults to remember the value and what they bring to the table and to get involved in our work.
So the idea is building maybe more social groups and creating opportunities. And is that's part of what your task force does, is create these social opportunities through like groups with similar interests, for example.
Correct.
So could you follow up on that, Caitlin, when I say screening for loneliness? Because it's a public health issue, and this is why I like talking about this topic, because the Surgeon General once cited that chronic loneliness can have the same mortality effect as smoking a dozen cigarettes a day, which is just really shocking. But, I mean, do you think we should be doing more to screen for, like, should doctors ask you, for example, if you're lonely?
Yeah, well, I think the problem with screening, there's a couple things. One, we don't have great measurements to really sort of hone in on the concept of isolation and loneliness, given that it's such a diverse experience for so many people in different ways. I think the other piece about that is one of the things our task force is really trying to work to combat is this sort of public stigma about being isolated or lonely. When you ask somebody if they're lonely, there's going to be a hesitance for them to sort of raise their hand and say, yes, I am. So that's the stigma is something we're really working towards.
I really do want to ask you this question, just practical takeaway tips for listeners who want to reduce loneliness, think about it, ways to incorporate it in their lives. So if you could just give us one or two ways, let's start with you, Sandra, of something we could do in our daily lives.
I would strongly suggest volunteering, getting involved, making a commitment to give back to the community. That goes a long way in helping you to not only help yourself, but to help someone in need.
And as a working mom, I'm going to go with something a little bit easier to do in your daily life, which is to compliment a stranger. It gives the person a feeling of being seen, and it gives you a little kickback in terms of being connected.
Oh, I love that. Well, that's a very nice scarf.
Thank you.
That was Caitlin Coyle. She's the director at the Center for Social and Demographic Research on Aging at the Gerontology Institute at UMass. Thank you so much for being here.
It was a pleasure.
Sandra Harris, state president for AARP Massachusetts, and both of these women are co-chairs of the Massachusetts Task Force to End Loneliness and Build Community. And they have a whole host of tips on their websites for you for things that you could just do in your daily lives. Thank you both.
Thank you.